Hi, Saul.
Hi, Nora.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Beautiful sunny day out here.
Is it ever anything else?
Yeah. Honestly.
So just a couple of things about the interview. First of all, I wanted to check. We may want to post this at our website.
Sure.
So would you be comfortable with that?
Yep.
Great.
So I should be careful of stumbling and...
Okay. Maybe you may want to be careful of swearing or something.
You know how often I've done that.
Okay, are you ready to go?
Sure.
All right. Saul, what's the biggest distraction in your day, besides me, I mean?
Oh, well, probably everything that comes in through my computer and all my other electronic devices that I carry with me. Things like email is probably the biggest one because they usually demand I answer at the moment, and I'm constantly interrupted by email.
Including several emails from me over the course of this last week. So, Saul, most of us have faced this problem of constant interruptions by things like email and text message. And now, of course, people are getting, you know, Facebook updates and Twitter messages and so on. Why is this idea of interruption such a problem with computers in particular?
Well, to answer the question, we have to understand how computers have been designed to date. All of our computers demand what's called foreground interaction. We have to look at our screens, we have to decide on the information, and we have to deal with it. All the email calls we get come in through our computer. They alarm at us by ringing or by flashing on the screen, and they're demanding our attention. That's not how things actually have to be. And unfortunately, we've seen the same thing happen with all the devices we carry, our cell phones ringing at inappropriate times, messages coming on pagers, and so on.
So how does that compare to the way people get information in the rest of our lives?
Well, if we think about what happens in our everyday world, where we are surrounded by an immense amount of information, but the beauty of most of it is that it fits in our surroundings. It's part of our environment, and we can... we're aware of that information, and we can selectively decide to attend it if we want. Most information around us goes unnoticed. The cars as we drive by as we're walking down the road, the chatter of conversations that happen around us, and so on. It's only when things happen that seem relevant or that we decide to pay attention to it that it does become part of our lives. And that's the beauty of the everyday world. And it's something that's very, very hard to replicate on computers.
You mean that if I'm walking in a garden and a flower catches my eye, then I notice it and then I walk towards it and I smell it and I interact with it in a more foreground kind of way?
That could be, or it could also be something like you may hear a bee buzzing by you, and it may, as part of that, you may just glance around and say, oh, well, it's off on its merry path, and you can just ignore it. Or you say, this is getting close to me, and I'm allergic to bees, so I better pay attention here, and I better move away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the amount of attention we decide to put on it and how we act on it is very much a subtle thing that we have quite a bit of control over.
Do we know how human beings are able to do that? Like, how do I know what I'm supposed to be paying attention to?
We're pretty well wired from a psychology point of view in terms of how we notice things. So, for example, we notice movement in our peripheral vision very, very readily. What we do when we see movement is that we quickly glance over and we decide at that point in time, usually unconsciously, on whether we want to attend to it more. Mm-hmm. The same thing happens with sounds. We often are very good at hearing changes in sound. So, for example, you could be in a room, a fan or an air conditioner could be going, you may not notice it, and then all of a sudden it shuts off and you say, something has happened.
Right.
So this is probably arose because of the protection mechanism. This is how we survived in the early days of society.
There are a lot of different approaches to dealing with information overload. Can you tell me about what you and your team are doing?
What we're trying to do is we're trying to design computers, and when I say computers that are quite unorthodox in appearance, that actually fit into people's surroundings, into their everyday lives, into their everyday routines, in a way that it becomes part of their environment, and they're just more or less aware in the background of what's going on them, but when something happens of interest to them, they can pay more attention to it.
So what do these computers actually look like?
Well, we could. They could look like many things. So some could be small screens strategically positioned around a home. They may look like portraits or photos, or they could be what I'll call an appliance, but looks like something that fits gracefully in the home. It could be a flower in a flower pot that's actually an artificial flower that's under computer control.
Wait a minute. It's a computer, but it looks like a flower?
Oh, well, why not? A computer, remember, is not a screen, a mouse, or a keyboard. That's just what we see of
right.
it. A computer can be anything we want. We could design things that are computers, even though they don't look like it. Perhaps I can give you an example.
Yeah, please.
So there's a lot of interest in what's called aging in place. That is, how can we have our elderly people, usually our family members, stay in their homes or their apartment instead of going to a special home?
Right.
Now, this may demand monitoring by the kids or the extended family. We can imagine one way of doing it by putting a video camera in their home and having a screen in our home where we watch what they do. And if you're
right.
like me, you'd probably immediately think that this is not the way we want to do it. This
right.
strikes more like surveillance, privacy, it's intrusion. It's intrudes. Instead, we could put some sensors into that person's home that just monitors movement. And that's a pretty good approximation if somebody's moving around the home over the day that things are going okay.
Right.
Now, in my home, instead of having a display on my computer that I have to look at or be behind to see, I could actually have a floral arrangement, for example, or maybe even a photo of my mom in the living room, position where I walk by it through the day, where that arrangement somehow shows the state of movement or the state of health of my mom.
You mean like the picture might get darker or the flower might droop or something? Like,
that's right.
Yeah.
Like one of my students created a flower, for example, that blooms under program control. So if it's a blooming flower, things are okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you see it withered away in its stalk, you know that there may be a problem and maybe it's time to go mm-hmm. over and take a look to see what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be, as you say, the photo could lighten, or there could be something in the frame that changes, or it could even have slight motions that reflect the movement in the distant house. So we don't even have to look at the photo, but we can hear it very subtly as we move around our own home.
Right.
But the key to these devices is not that they're a device and you buy it. It's how they fit within our surroundings. If we take that picture frame or that flower and we put it in the closet or in the office where we're rarely there, it'll have very little utility.
Right.
But if we put it in our living room, it has a whole different meaning to it.
So you can have ones that vary by location? Can you explain that a bit more?
Right. In the home, we actually locate information in very strategic ways. Think about the parent who wants to make sure that their kid takes something out of the oven when they get home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they'll probably take a little post-it note and stick it on the television because they know that as soon as their kid gets home, the kid's going to go and play video games.
Right.
So we exploit that naturally. Now, the same way we can exploit these locations that are at home or knowledge of the routines of a family or in an office setting to actually put information in the right place at the right time in a way that people can actually see and use it. An example could be...
Saul, can you hold on for just a second?
Sorry,
sure.
I just wanted to...
Liz, I'm in the middle of an interview.
I'm really sorry. I just had this one... I just found this one thing about people being distracted by email, and they just did a new study in the UK, and people check their email up to 40 times an hour, and I thought you might want to talk to Saul about that.
We already talked about
okay.
that, Liz.
Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry about that, Saul.
Oh, hang on. I just got to finish composing this email reply to what an urgent
okay.
message.
So how important is this whole issue of, ambient display of information, displaying information without interrupting in the computing world right now? How big a problem is this?
Well, I would say it's extremely important. The idea of ubiquitous computing, that is computers everywhere, is something that is real now. We carry a multitude of computers with us, be it our cell phones, our personal digital assistants, our watches even, plus let alone the many computers that people now use, be it games or other things. The problem is no longer one of getting information. We have figured that out. We have a lot of information online. We know how to find it. We can search it and all those things. The problem is how do we manage it reasonably in our day-to-day lives? And putting it all on a screen is not the answer. And that's why there's so much frustration with computers, be it with distraction or changes the way we work or people demanding things of us over the course of the day, where at the end of the day we feel like we've done nothing. So the idea of an ambient display, of getting it into our environment, is a way to try to temper that, to try to say, how can we situate information in our environment in a way that is what's called calm technology. That is, it's calming to us, it fits within our surroundings, we can naturally attend to it when we want, and we can ignore it when we want.
So do you imagine a future in, whatever, 5 or 10 years from now, where we have dozens of these computers in our homes, and maybe they could even be designed to look like art objects? You could imagine a whole world of artists working and making these things look actually quite beautiful.
Well, that's a good point. Whenever people talk about devices like these, they usually talk about the design of them as well. They have to be aesthetic. They have to fit within our environment. We spend a lot of time buying things for our homes and our office in a way that fits with our surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only going to be artists. It'll be industrial designers. It'll be craftspeople who will actually be creating these devices. It's not going to be computer scientists. They'll understand the technology. But the beauty of it, well, there are whole organizations out there who know how to make things beautiful and fitting.
So if we wanted to get something like that flower that would give you the ambient display about how your parent or grandparent was doing, is that something that's around the corner? When could we expect to see a device like that?
Building devices like that is actually pretty easy. In fact, I have my students, undergrad students, do it within a week or two. The problem is the infrastructure behind them. We now need wireless devices, ideally for the home. We want good power so that we're not constantly fiddling with batteries. We want to be able to pick them up and move them. They should understand their location. They need to be able to hook into that information network in a meaningful way so that the information is actually delivered in a form that the device can understand it. This is almost like creating a whole utility behind information dissemination. The same way we may have, many appliances in our home, but we need that utility to deliver power to those appliances before they can work. So the same thing is going to happen. We can easily create prototypes that show how these work. Creating the actual systems where they become part of our home will probably take, a decade or two, and will probably come slowly.
So I shouldn't ask for a flower computer for my next birthday.
You could probably buy things like that are targeted to devices. Like, people are selling things like email notifiers and the like. Most of them are pretty cheesy, but they are there. Most of them are tied, unfortunately, to your main computer. But people are getting the idea, and we will see certainly niche markets for these where special purpose devices will be created. For example, I see instant messaging devices to be a natural thing.
Hmm. Saul, thanks so much.
No problem. Anytime.
Okay.
I have to go back to dealing with my email, though.
All right. I'll send you a text message later. We can follow up.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.